be here with you, a great privilege. I have been involved in the ingathering of Israel for, well, since 1991, really, which is a long time. But the last two or three years I haven't done much because I've got a bit old and the Lord's let me off. But I've been in more than 50 countries and I've had some amazing adventures. And most of them that had really significant miraculous workings of God are in my two books down there. They're about God and not about me. But I want to tell you a little bit about it. It's very interesting that your pastor read that little scripture, because that was one I was going to read to you from Isaiah chapter 11. Because it's very significant, that one. It says, it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand a second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left. And it lists a lot of countries. We'll skip that and go over to verse 12. He will set up a banner for the nations. This is what I want you to listen to. He will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Now then, it's got the outcasts of Israel and the dispersed of Judah. Now, most people don't realise, unless they really read their Bibles thoroughly, how the tribes of Israel got dispersed long before the tribe of Judah. How many of you have read your Bible more than once, at least, from cover to cover? Well, quite a lot of you. Most places I go, about three people put their hands up. And all they read is the word for today or every day with Jesus or something. And they just get a little bite of scripture. But if you haven't read your Bible from beginning to end, please do. Because I tell you, unless you know the whole story, even Leviticus, it's well worth doing it all. Start on the beginning of the year and do a little bit each day and you'll find it is absolutely wonderful. And you will know that Solomon, at the end of his reign, disobeyed God. And so God split up the nation and he separated 10 tribes. And have you heard of the 10 lost tribes? A few nods, yes. And they got scattered first. They got taken away as outcasts, it says here, by Sennacherib, and dispersed all over the place. But it's very interesting today that God is finding them. Isn't that amazing? Have you heard of B'nai Manasseh, the sons of the lost tribe of Manasseh, which was found in northern India? Well, I once went to Burma and I was in Mandalay, and there in the church there were dozens of these lost tribe of Manasseh. And when I mentioned it, they were going like this, B'nai Manasseh, B'nai Manasseh. The sons of Manasseh, and they have become Christians because in the late 1800s, Methodist missionaries went there and taught them about the Lord Jesus. So although I went to see Michael Freund and said about them, he said, they're all Christians, and wouldn't listen to me. But the others in northeastern India are mostly not believers, and he doesn't know that some of them are, because they're relatives. And they've been taking them back to Israel. That's one lost tribe. And there are others, because the tribes of Ethiopia, the Jewish people in Ethiopia, are the lost tribe of Dan. And there are others, like the Jewish people that came out of Yemen. They're a lost tribe. They lived in the desert. But what is interesting is that they never lost their Jewish customs. They lost some of them, but not all of them. I went to China, and I met the Jewish people, I forgot the name of the town now. Anyway, there are about 600 Jewish people there. They're not a lost tribe, but they were allowed to go there by the first emperor. Seven travellers went along the Silk Road, merchants, and they were allowed to stay and be merchants, but he gave them all Chinese names. So there's Mr. Yang and Mr. Chung and Mr. Heng and all those names. And the families still have the same names today. And they did have a synagogue, but about 150 years ago it got washed away in the floods. And they're very poor, and they've never built another synagogue. And because they haven't had a rabbi or anyone to teach them, they've gradually gone away from Jewish customs. But there was a young man over there, an American lad called Tim, whose family live in Israel, and I did meet him once. He remembered that. He was 13 when I met him. Anyway, he said, oh, I know you. And he'd gone there to teach them Hebrew and teach them Jewish customs because they didn't know. I don't know if you ever heard a Chinese person speaking Hebrew, but I tell you, you don't understand a word of it, even if you can speak Hebrew. It's very funny. But they've now started to take them back. They're not a lost tribe, but they are a lost people. And this is what this is saying. He would gather the outcasts of Israel and the dispersed of Judah. Now, Judah has been dispersed all over the world. I've been to, say, well over 50 countries, and some of them, there were no Jews. There were none in North Korea. There were none in Vietnam. And there were none in, what's the country next door? You're all saying it and I can't remember it. Anyway, there weren't any there. But other countries I've been in, there are many, many Jewish people. And it's been my privilege, really, that God has helped me bring them back. He first sent me with Ebenezer when they started a ship going from Odessa to Haifa. And I was on the sailings the first year. I had them every week. And it started off with 30 or 40 Jews. And by the end of the summer, after 25 sailings, we were having over 200 coming. And it was getting too much because we had the accommodation. We had to have tents in the fields. And they stopped the ship. And that's when God started taking me to other countries. He first took me to Armenia. And Armenia was in dire straits because there was a war with Azerbaijan. There was an area called Nagorno-Karabakh, which actually belonged to Armenia, but Stalin, in his divide and share, had given it to Azerbaijan. Well, when communism collapsed, the Armenians asked for that town, that area back, and a war started. And Azerbaijan blockaded their border and wouldn't give them any gas or electric or oil, so they had no energy, only one power station. Yes, and because the Turks are the same as areas of Turks, Turkey blockaded their border. The northern border with Georgia, there was a civil war going on, and the bottom border is with Iran, that was closed. So they were getting nothing in. And a friend of mine went there and she found how desperately poor they were. They hadn't got food, they had heating on once a day. Just think, if you had an hour's electricity once a day, it could come in the middle of the night, any time. And they had everything switched on so that when it came on, all the lights went on and they all shouted, "Svet, Svet," and rushed around to get the washing finished, which was half done, and the cooking done and the kettle boiled, even in the middle of the night. And they were living like that. Anyway, she came home and she said to me, "Esther, there are Jews there." And I knew God was saying, "You go with her next time." Well, the next time we went, we took a lot of boxes of aid with us to give out. And we've tried to find the Jews. It took us 3 days and it was snow on the ground. But we found three of the Jews. And one was called Vili Viner. He was head of the community, and his brother Reuven. And we said we were bringing aid. Well, they'd had none. And we said, "We'll get you some." And we talked to them about going to Israel. And they said, "Oh, no, we're all right." They were a bit wary because we were Christians. "Don't come near us, you know." And they said they could go from Moscow. Well, we went home and we phoned them up and said, "Did you get your aid?" And they said, "Oh, yes, nobody else has helped us." And then Billy said to me, "Do you think you could get us a plane?" Well, I said, "Oh, yes." We'd already chartered a plane to take humanitarian aid in, and Baroness Cox had helped us. And although we had chartered it, £40,000. Neither of us had money. And we knew God had told us to do it. We had phoned Baroness Cox, and she said, maybe the government can help you. You should speak to Linda Chalker. Well, people in high places. So we phoned her, and she said, oh, no, we'll have to see. And she phoned us up 2 days later, and she said, tell me about this plane, because we're going to take it over for you. We said, what? They said, well, the president of Armenia is coming on a state visit to Britain, and we want to show him we're helping his people. So the first plane got paid for, 40,000. Well, when this filly said, could you get us a plane? And we said, yes. We couldn't expect the government to pay for this one. So we went to the place where we chartered planes, somewhere in Sussex, and we dressed up smart, you know, and went in and talked to these people, and they got it all set up for us, but it would be $90,000, which is £60,000. And we were planning to take humanitarian aid in and Jews out to Israel. Well, this is a very, very long story, and I can't tell you all of it, but it ended up that we had to pay for that plane, and we hadn't got any money. And they said we'd like a deposit of £60,000. We'd have a deposit of £20,000 at the end of the first month. Well, my friend said to me, you go to Armenia and get the Jews ready, and I'll get the humanitarian aid. Because I had been doing this for years, getting Jews ready to go, helping them get their visas and everything, and organising buses and so on. And so I went back over there, and we had no money at the end of the month, so she asked her friend, and she lent her £20,000. So we paid a deposit. And the time went by, and we got the Jews, met them in a big hall like this, and told them about it. Well, they were very wary, very dubious, would this really happen? And quite a number of them agreed, and we got the consul to come, and they got all their documents. But on the day before, we had to pay the rest. We hadn't had a penny come. Now, you might think we could have tried to raise it, but God was showing me, you can do it if you like, but could I raise £60,000 in 3 months? What do you think? Jumble sales, bring and buys, coffee mornings? No way. And I knew that if I started raising this money, God would say, okay, you do it. And I was dead scared. Somebody sent me £60, and I said, no, I can't take it. She said, well, use it for something, you know. But I said, I can't take money towards the plane. I was so afraid that God would say, all right, you'd get the rest. Oh, it was quite frightening. Anyway, the day before, my friend phoned up Gustav Scheller, who had been doing the boats, who knew me very well. And she asked him, and I'd been asking him, I'd been to see him before I went out there. And he kept saying, well, I'd like to, but I've got enough things, you know. And I haven't heard from God. He hasn't told me to do it. So my friend phoned him up and said, look, we haven't got this money. We've got the Jewish people ready. There are quite a number of them. And the plane's ready to go. Would you lend it to us? So he said, I'll pray about it. So he put messages out to various intercessors. And he had two or three back that came about the man who knocked on the door asking for bread for his friends. And the man said he hadn't got, you know, he was in bed asleep with his children. And the man persisted in knocking. And he said, well, I have to say that Esther's been persistent. She's been faxing me every week. And he said, I haven't heard from God. Well, at that moment, the clock fell off the wall. And it was, and then I looked at it, it was stopped at 12 o'clock exactly. And this man had come knocking at midnight, and they felt that was a sign from God that they should lend the money. So Gustav said he'd lend it to us for 3 months, and we've got to pay it back. Anyway, so he lent us the money, and the plane came. So now we still owe all this money. And then the plane came, and we got all the people ready, and, well, it was coming. And I went in to pay. We'd been down to see them, and they said to pay for the plane coming was $500, and I had it in an envelope sealed up, and I took it to pay. And they said, $500? What do you mean? I said, well, that's what you told me, they said. They said, it's $600, $6,000 for the plane landing and taking off, and $3,000 for processing the Jewish people through. You've changed the system. You're bringing in aid and you're taking out our people. I said, but you said 500. I'd only got 500. So now it was going to be $99,000. And anyway, we argued with you and argued and argued all day. And he kept saying the plane's not coming. And we said, yes, it is. And he argued with me. And in the end, he said, oh, I'll get it checked. And he stood up. He was a big fat man. And he said, oh, what's this? Oh, he said, it's a fax. The plane set off at 7 o'clock. It's due here any minute. Anyway, we all rushed down and they get all the aid off. But their Jewish people were still waiting. They're ever so patient. They're so used to the communist system where you never got anything in a hurry. You had to wait and queue. So they weren't too concerned. We were. Anyway, we hadn't got the money. And we were praying, Lord, what are we going to do about this money? And we went back to the Jewish people and we went back to the people concerned and talked to them. No, we went to speak to this one and that one. No, we want $9,000, $6,000 and $3,000. Well, we came back and we thought, well, maybe we can raise up the $3,000. So my friend had got $1,000 with her because she'd brought it out to give as aid to the churches and the people there. And Ashot, the pastor who was helping us, he was saving to build and build a church for his little community. So he said, I've got $1,500 at home. So he rushed home and got that. Now we needed, I'd got $500. So we put it together and rushed into this place and said, here, we've got the $3,000. So can we, let the Jewish people go and get the other money. And they signed all that and they said, no, we want the 6,000. So my friend went down to reassure the Jewish people and I stood outside and I thought, if I go in, I said, look, if you keep me here, like a sort of hostage, I didn't use the word hostage, keep me here, my friends will pay. We'd get the money in a couple of days. No way. I wasn't worth $6,000. So they threw me out. Well, I went out, and this is where the miracle happened. When I say God does everything, I want you to see how he puts everything in place. I went outside, and I leaned on the wall. And I thought, Lord, I said, have we been two stupid women? And this wasn't from you. Because it could have been. We've had no money come. And one of the signs that God is in it is the money. I knew this from previous experience. Lord, have we been really stupid women? Please, Lord, what is this? I felt arrows from the devil all coming at me. Oh, cried, oh God, what can we do? He said, go to the pilots. Go to the pilots. I rushed back in. I said to my friend, we've got to go to the pilots. So we went round and we found the plane, because it was all dark. There was no electricity at that time. We went round and we found the plane, because they had torches. And they said, what's going on? There were three pilots and three stewardesses. So we told them. They said, well, they closed this airport when we landed. So we knew there was trouble. But the head man, who was the head of the company, called Neville Mack, he said to me, did you say $6,000? He said, yes. He put his hand in his pocket and he said, I think you'll find there's 6,000 there. Go and pay it. I mean, when you think about it, that's God, isn't it? He knew this would happen. So we went and paid it and they said we could go. And well, we couldn't go till about 4 o'clock in the morning, but eventually we saw the people off. The front of the book, I should have got one to show you, it's got a picture of the plane going and us waving it goodbye. And right in front of that plane, I'm not joking, was an angel blowing a trumpet because it was opening the way for the Jews from Armenia. It's quite incredible. Well, we went back to Ashok because we were up all night and we had nothing to eat, no sleep, and we all slept 2 hours and then we woke up and we were praying about it. And I got a picture, and it said, it was a picture of Bill paid in full. And it was just paid in full. And I said, oh, I've just got a picture. This bill's been paid in full. And at that moment, the fax machine went, and it was Gustav. He'd had another word from the Lord, from the scripture, from three different people, which said, never pay back what you have loaned. Never ask back for what you have loaned. And he said, God has given me permission to pay. That was the 40,000, which was to go from Armenia to Israel. We still owed 2,600 and the money we'd borrowed from the people in Armenia. So we prayed about that, and I got a very clear word of a legacy. So I said, legacy, Lord? Anyway, we didn't hear about it. My friend went home, and I stayed on for a while for organising some more Jewish people to go home, which is another story. And a person that had lent her the money had an aunt who died and left her £20,000 in a legacy. So she just wrote it off. And that's our God, isn't it? Can you see how he stepped in at every step of the way? So we went to see, I must have gone back to England. We went to see a company where we'd hired a plane to see about paying back this money and any other money we owed them, because they'd been there longer. So we said about it, and Neville Mack said, no, it's all paid for. So we said, well, what about that 6,000? Oh, it's all included. So we said, but how did you know? He said, well, when I was leaving, I was putting on my jacket, my blazer and my out uniform. He said, and I had this nudge, but I had this $6,000 in my wardrobe. He said, and I've been so busy, I hadn't had time to get it in the bank. And I got this nudgy feeling to take it with me. And I thought, it's stupid. He's not a Christian, this man. Stupid, I won't be going shopping. What am I going to do in Israel with $6,000? So he thought, and then it came again, take it with you. And he thought, oh, blow it, and stuffed it in his pocket. And that was God, and this man's not a Christian. I mean, God can do anything. He's God of the impossible. And so all that plane got paid for because we put the word out about the money we'd borrowed, the 6,000, and lots of people sent money so we could pay Ashod back his money and other people, I don't know where we got the money from. It was all paid, and the whole lot was paid up. And we never had to raise a penny of it. Isn't our God amazing? That was the first group. We had two more planes after that. Well, I can't tell you about those because I'd be here a week. I'd like to tell you about some other times. During the time of the Gulf War, the Russians invaded the Baltic states. Now, nobody knew about it because our eyes were all on the Middle East and Saddam Hussein and his rockets. But the people there all gathered in thousands around their radio station and around their parliaments. And the Russians went in and mowed down some of them with tanks. But it got known in the world and they had to stop. But it meant that the travelling there was stopped. Well, I'd come back to England and God said to me, I want you to go to the Baltic States and to St. Petersburg, which then was Leningrad, and find Jews who want to go to Israel and haven't got the money. Well, I didn't have a penny, so I was praying to God, and money came from everybody. I hadn't told them. I never, never asked for money. I just wrote a newsletter and said I was going and what I was going to do, and money came. I had thousands of dollars. I got it changed to dollars. And I was in Shrewsbury, was it? No, Salisbury. With a friend, and she took me to the market. Now here again, God is, I want you to see how God's in everything. It's not me, don't look at me. And I was going past a shop selling bags, and God's a market stall, and God said, buy that bag. I said, that bag, what for, Lord? It was a tapestry bag, a sort of oval shaped one, rather nice. I don't need a bag, buy the bag. So I bought it. And when I was getting ready to go to the Baltic States, by then they had started the first tour to be allowed to go. I heard about it. And so it was a secular group. It wasn't Christians. But I applied to go, and I was put with a lady from Sheffield to share my room. And off we went. And I had got all this money together. Now, when you go into the Soviet Union, even though this is still finished and it's now different countries, they still ask you when you go in how much money you've got, and when you come out, what you spent it on. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do about this? And he showed me why I had this bag. He showed me, because round the bottom was a black rim. And he showed me to put this money in the bottom of this bag and cover it up. Well, and the ladies will know that in pairs of tights, there's a piece of cardboard. And that was the exact shape, so I put that on the top. And now we've got a false bottom. God is so clever. And I never thought when I bought that bag what it was for. And I had some other money, of course. So off we went, and we went to Vilnius, and we went to Riga, and we went to Estonia. Pardon? Tallinn, yeah. They're very beautiful cities. If you ever want to go on a trip, they are lovely. They're very lovely cities. Not like Russian cities built up with all these blocks of flats. They're very attractive. And I did meet with Jewish people in each place, and did give some of them money. And I had a lot left. And then we went to St. Petersburg, to Leningrad. Now, they had got tickets for us to go to the Bolshoi Ballet. And God showed me, you don't go, you go and find my people. But when I said I didn't want to go, they said, you're not going to the ballet? What's the matter with you? So I said, oh, you know, I want to rest. So they all went off, and I laid on my bed. And I said, Lord, how am I going to find these Jews? He said, well, you're not going to find them laying on your bed. So get up and go and find the synagogue. Synagogue in Leningrad. So I went down to the desk and I asked, and they showed me a map of the town. And there was a mosque marked, but no synagogue. And I got the impression that this mosque was really a synagogue. So I'd travelled a lot in Russia, and I knew how to get about on the underground. So I found it was pouring, absolutely pouring with rain. I took the money with me because you daren't leave it in the hotel. And I set off. Well, I don't know if you've ever been to Russia, but you'll know what I'm talking about. When I had to change stations and go somewhere else, there were all these drug addicts and drunk people laying around on the sides, and people trying to sell you things. Oh. Anyway, eventually I got to where the synagogue was, but it was a good long walk from the underground, the metro. Well, I walked and walked and got there, and it was shut. The gate was shut. I said, Lord, I do grumble at him sometimes. I said, Lord, I said, you've brought me all the way here and it's shut. And I won't be able to come any other time. He said, go round the back. Go round the back. So I looked up the side, and up the side was a white van with a man loading things. So I cheered up and went up there. And I said, he was getting in another building, but round the back of the synagogue was another red brick place. And I said, are there any Jews around here? And he pointed to that building and said, upstairs. He knew, I might have spoken in Russian, I can't remember, but he knew what I said. Anyway, I went up the stairs, and apparently this was their old synagogue, and they'd built this other one as a new one many years before. And I got up there and I went in this room. Well, it was amazing. There was this little man sitting there with his glasses on the end of his nose, like you see in pictures, and he'd got a tenach, and he was reading it like this, you know. Anyway, and there were lots of Jewish people round the sides with their talit, bowing, davening, and they all turned and looked at me. So I said, I must have said it in Russian, but I don't remember it now. I said, I've come to find any Jewish person that wants to go to Israel and can't. And they all said, Moshe, Moshe. So I said, Moshe? They said, yes, we'll phone him up. So they phoned him up. Well, the Russian telephone stopped and started and disappeared. You know, you're talking to someone, it went, faded, and then you had to ring them again. Well, eventually we got this Moshe, and I explained, and he said, I think, he spoke English beautifully, I think we should meet. So he said he'd meet me the next morning in the hotel vestibule. Well, the next morning I came down, and there he was, with his little hat on, standing by a pillar, head felt down like this. I thought, that's him. Well, there were all these other very wealthy people with their rings and jewels, so I knew he wasn't one of them. And I went over, I said, "You must be Moshe. How did you know?" So he said, "Let's go over to the park across the road and you can tell me." So we went across the park and sat there. And I said, "I represent Christians from all over the world who love the Jewish people." He pulled his hat over his face and he said, "Love the Jewish people? Love the Jewish people? Nobody loves us. Nobody loves us." That's what they all think. So I said, "But they do." "No, no, no. Perhaps it's just you." So I said, "No. And they've given me money to help people who want to go to Israel." "Oh," he said, "all his life my grandfather wanted to go to Israel, and all his life my father wanted to go, and all my life I've wanted to go, but I can't. My wife can go, my brothers and sisters can go, all the children can go, but I can't." I said, "Why not?" "Oh," he said, "I was in secret work." He said, "I've been left there, retired 5 years, but they still won't let me go." I said, "What was the secret? Secret of the work?" He said, "That's a mystery. That's a secret. Nobody knows." Anyway, I said, "Well, I've got some money for you to be able to go to Israel." He looked amazed. He said, "Christians?" He said, "I don't know anything about Christians. Can you tell me about Christians?" So I told him a little bit about it. I said, Have you ever read the New Testament?" "Oh no, that's forbidden." I said, "Who forbade you? Was it the rabbis or is it God?" "Oh, I think it's the rabbis." I said, "Well, I think God would want you to read it." He said, "Are there Jews like me? I'm a religious Jew. Are there Jews like me in Israel?" I said, "There's many and they live in Me'er Shearim and places like that." "Oh," he said, "well, when I go there, and you come, and you can come and teach me about being a Christian." I thought the religious Jews would be very pleased I'm doing that. But I'd have gone. Anyway, I arranged to meet him the next day, not where he was, out in the public. And he took me to his flat, and it was Erev Shabbat. And they were all dressed in their, even the little girls with their long sleeves. And they had this system where the lights came on, where you didn't switch them on, you know. All the religious rules. And he took me in, his wife gave me some food, and I took him this money. It was all rolled up. I don't know how much, it must have been $1,000. I said to him, that's enough for you. And do you know anybody else?" "Oh yes, I know two other people." And he said, "I could share it with them." I said, "Yes." I said, "It wasn't rich people who gave this money. It was ordinary people, working people, who sent it for you because they love you." He still couldn't take this on board. He sort of wept, and he held this money like it was the greatest treasure. And we said goodbye, and I came back. When I went to Israel next time, I told him about where I was working at Christian Friends of Israel. I gave him the address, and he said he'd let me know when he was there. But when I got there, CFI had moved their office to another place. But there was this letter on my desk, and it was from him. "Dear Esther, we are here." They'd all got there. And he said, "When we've found a place of our own to live, I will find you. I will let you know and come and see you." But of course, I never heard from him again, because CFI had moved and he wouldn't have known where it was. But it doesn't matter, does it? The whole family got to Israel, didn't they? Wasn't that wonderful? That's one man crying out to go. Have I got time to tell a quick story? Yes. I'll tell you a very modern one, because that was a long while ago. Well, a little while back, must have been 2 or 3 years now, God said to me, "I want you to go to Iran." I said, "Lord, Iran?" Well, he'd said to me, "I want you to go to countries where they can't come out." I said, "Lord, that's a waste of time. Why are you telling me to go there? They won't be able to come." He said, "Well, you've done it before." And he reminded me of 3 times, which I can't tell you about now, where he'd helped me get Jewish people out from places where they were not allowed to come. So he said, "You go to Iran." Well, how'd you get to Iran? Well, I found there was nowhere in England that organised tours to Iran, nowhere. And I knew I'd got to take someone with me. I want you to understand again that God did everything. and he selects every person that travels with me, and it's not always the same one. In fact, very often completely different people. He said, I want you to take someone with you. Well, the thing is, to go to Iran, you must not have Israel in your passport. I mean, I've been to Syria and other countries that won't allow you in. And I got two passports years and years ago. I was advised to, in the days when it was communism in Russia. And if you went, which I did, they followed you around. So you couldn't have Israel in your passport. And a very wise man said to me, get a second one, which I did. And I have one I use for Israel and one for other places. So I knew I was all right, but what was I going to focus? All my friends have been to Israel. How many of you have been there? Lots of you. Well done. If you haven't, do try and go. It's wonderful. Anyway, I prayed about it. I said, Lord, how am I going to find somebody who hasn't got Israel? And the phone went. It was a friend of mine called Jean. And she said, oh, she said, I've just thought of something. She said, it must be someone who's had to renew their passports. I thought of it because I've just done mine. And God said, that's her. I said, well, do you? Oh, no, she said, I'm 83, which she was then. And she said, and she'd had operations on her knees that didn't work. But you see, God knows who he's choosing. She couldn't walk 100 yards because her knees were too bad. And she had a little thing that folded up that she could sit on and use it as a walking stick to walk. And she said, no, and I'm too old. I think it was just a few years ago, because I'm a bit older than her now. And she said, I can't go. Well, I said, I think God's saying it's you. Anyway, she agreed it was, and it ended up with both of us going. Well, I thought, how do you book a tour in Iran? There's no company in England, so I went on the computer. Bless God for computers. I don't like it, but I have to have it. I wouldn't have one for years, and then I had to. And I found that I was looking at the time, yeah, it's all right. And then he said, go on the computer. So I did, and I got this company that did tours from England. And I had this very faint voice that you could get, and we sent each other emails, and when you talked, it kept breaking and squeaking. But anyway, it ended up, we set up the tour. And we were going to Tehran and a few other cities, and we went. And we had to have a guide and a driver. And the tour group, which was two of us, well, I won't go into all the details, but he took us all round. We went round Tehran. There's nothing interesting or exciting there. But we said to the man, look, we want to walk around by ourselves this afternoon. The thing was that we walk 100 yards, and there we had to have we'd sit down. Now, their trees had a little wall around them so we could sit and rest. Now, we stood out because we were totally different to start with, but they all wore the Muslim gear. Everybody did. Whether you were Jew or Gentile, they had Rosicrucians and all sorts, but they all wore this gear, Christians and everything. And we had to. We had to go and get our passport visas done with a photo of ourselves. We had to have a scarf that was round there, round your eyebrows and just under your chin. And you had to wear a long top that came down to your knuckles, and there was and covered over your skirt. And you had a skirt that went down to your ankles, or you could have trousers, but you had to have a skirt over it. So we went and got a couple of long skirts. And of course, in England, they were bright colours, weren't they? And the tops we wore had long sleeves, but they were bright colours. So of course, we stood out. And anyway, we looked different. And when we sat on the wall, every time we did, all these young people would crowd round us. I've never found it so easy to evangelise, because all they wanted to know was about Jesus. They were getting off the sky, you know, satellite dishes, and they all wanted to know about Jesus. Our guide did too, and our driver. They all wanted to know about Jesus, so we could talk to them. And there was always somebody that knew English that told all the others. It was amazing. Well, everywhere we went, it was like this. And they took us to a place called Isfahan, and our guide took us to a church there which was full of former Muslims, and the place was watched all the time in case any went in because they weren't supposed to change their religion. And many of them are in prison today. They've got hundreds of them in prison in Iran, and they can be executed. Well, we then went to a synagogue, and I thought, oh, this is it. But it wasn't. It's never like you think. You think, you know, it'd be this or that, but God's got a better plan. We went in and saw the people and the children and had a chat. And when they did the service, they were very impressed because I go to a Jewish group and I could read the service. And we tried to talk to them about going to Israel, but if you mentioned the name, they were scared. You weren't allowed to say the word Israel. Anyway, we came out of there, and then he took us to another town, and he said in the morning, in the evening when we said goodbye, I'll come to you about lunchtime tomorrow because you need to have a rest. I said, we don't need a rest. We've only got a week here. Please, don't waste the morning. He was very worried, obviously. He said he'd come at 10 o'clock. So he came at 10. He took us to shops where they and took us to a factory that made carpets. And at 12 o'clock, he said, oh, it's all right now. He said, it's Army Day. He was afraid we'd be abducted because being Army Day, every town, every city had a big gathering of the local army in the square. And this town had a huge square. And there'd be hundreds of the soldiers. And if they saw us, they'd think we were Americans. And he was so afraid that we'd be abducted that he wouldn't let us go there. And in that square was the biggest mosque ever. Well, I wasn't bothered about the mosque, but he wanted us to go and see it. Anyway, we started off down this like mall, which had a few little shops. And as we started going down, some soldiers were still coming out. He whisked us into a shop. But this was God. I want you to see everything that happened. It's God. We went in this shop. It was a toy shop. We were looking at the toys. And little tiny models they were. And Jean needed a toilet. So they let her go at the back of the shop. So she went there. It's all God, all the timing. So we came out. And the people had mostly gone. And the other thing we had to wear, apart from being covered to our knuckles, was black socks. Well, it was very hot, so that day we'd left our socks off. And as we went out, a few more soldiers were coming, but they didn't worry about us. And behind them was a whole lot of Iranian women, all in the black, you know, their faces covered and everything. And when they saw our bare feet, they screamed. Why had we got, you know, and screamed at our guide. We were so angry with him. We said, what's wrong? Well, you have to cover your toes. Why? Because apparently toes are sexy. So you mustn't let men see your toes. So watch it out, ladies. Anyway, I've never heard that one before. But anyway, we then got into the square. It was a huge, huge square. And Jean's feet were hurting her. And we just were going to sit down and she realised she'd left her sunglasses somewhere. And she went, oh, I've left my sunglasses somewhere. And they were very expensive ones and she needed them because her eyes were bad. So Hussein, our guide, said, I'll go and look for them. And so you sit here and wait. So we sat there and waited and he went off. And at that point, the far end of the square, a lady started coming through. And she was dressed in all the Muslim gear, all beigey coloured stuff. Now everybody came, saw us, would come up. So we signalled her to come over. And she sat with us. And Jean said to her something about, who do you pray to? Thinking she might be a Christian, because you could never tell. And she looked at me, and I didn't know, but she noticed that my ring has got my name in Hebrew, Esther. And I didn't know this, she told us later. She said, in French, je suis juif. I am Jewish. I said to her, you're Jewish? And I haven't spoken French much since I was at school, and that's a very long time ago. But you know, God can do anything. And I found myself able to speak enough French, and she knew a little bit of English, for her to tell us that she was a widow. Her husband had died 8 years before, and she got 4 children. She was desperate to go to Israel. Now just think, of all the people he put in my path were people that I could help because of all the experience I had of 20-odd years of helping Jews. But the other thing was the southern border of Iran was with Armenia, and they'd opened that border for trade when the others were shut. And my friends who were, had helped me, the team that helped me in Armenia, the leader was a man called Bagrat. He was taking people into Iran to evangelize. And he showed me that I had to, I contacted him, but he said, no, you can't come with us, because I thought he could take me in. No, and that would have exposed what they were doing, because we look so different. Iranians and Armenians look the same. They've got dark, curly hair. So anyway, she sat with us and told us her story. And I said to her, well, we might be able to help you. So I got her to give her name. Well, she wrote it on a piece of paper in Farsi, which is Persian. And it's like little walking sticks hanging on a washing line. Anyway, she said, we gave her some money, and I said, I'll see what we can do. Well, when we got home, I phoned Bagrat and told him. Oh, he said, we've got a lady going in. Send me on Wednesday, this was Monday, send me this information. But I couldn't, because I couldn't type it out, could I? So he said, photocopy it and fax it. Well, photocopying, I did, and the fax wouldn't take it. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do? He said, scan it. Well, I had a scanner, but I'd never used it. I said, God, I can't use a scanner. Oh, Esther, scan it. I said, Lord, how do I do it? I don't know. He said, I do. So I put it all on, and I put it in, and my finger seemed to know which thing to press. Anyway, I heard from Bagrat it had come through, and I phoned him on Thursday. I said, what happened? Oh, she went in. And of course she had to fly from Tehran to Isfahan and find this lady, and they'd taken all her papers and documents to the consul in Yerevan, and yes, she'd got permission and they could all go. So I'll be 2 minutes now. So I heard nothing for weeks, and I phoned up Bagrat, and he said, oh, they've gone. They all went, all the family went 3 weeks ago, within 3 weeks. A long time went by, and one day I got an email, half Hebrew in English and half English, saying, we are here, please come and see us. And I phoned up, and it was where they take Jews to help them settle. And this lady spoke English, and she told me where it was. And next time I went to Israel, I went to see her. And it turned out that she had an older daughter who was married with 3 children, and she and her 4 children, 10 Jewish people, came out of Armenia, out of Iran. I don't know how Bagrat did it. All I did was pass on the information, but 10 Iranians escaped, Jewish people from Iran. That's God. He did it. Okay, I better stop now because I'm getting signals. But if you want to know any more stories, there are dozens of them. My 2 books are at the back. And most of the money, when I make any profit on them, I give for the Lord's work. So you are giving to the Lord. Anyway, if you feel you'd like them afterwards, see me.
Amen. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you.